Hey, Sens fans, this is Stuntman Stu, and you're listening to the Six Sens Podcast.
Having won five games in a row with the most recent across the NHL points leading at Washington Capitals, life is pretty damn good in the nation's capital right now. The hockey team is winning. The weather's been remarkable. Looking to get even better right now. And Don Brennan's crafting ill-advised jokes about Alexei Kovalev buying a gun and shooting himself. Graham, is it not the best time in the world to be a Senators fan?
It's pretty damn good right now. Welcome back to the most irreverent Senators podcast on the internet. Yeah, it's a bit surreal right now in the nation's capital.
Yeah, everything's a bit weird, and it's not just because someone's playing a cruel April Fool's joke on us today.
You know what it kind of reminds me of?
Tell me.
Do you remember that episode of Saved by the Bell where Zach Morris takes the girl who's disabled in a wheelchair to the prom?
Yep.
You know, like, life doesn't get much better than that. You're in a wheelchair. You're going to the prom with Zach Morris.
Zach Morris.
Is it a one-off? Is there a second date?
Does she get a second cameo appearance?
That's exactly. You know, as a Senators fan, you beat the Washington Capitals, and you're thinking, you know, like, where can this team go from here? You get excited for the postseason. You don't know if it's a one-off, right?
Yeah, of course. The way the team's been playing all year, we really have no idea where this team stands. I mean, we see them in fifth in the standings right now, but, you know, this team could be one way or the other.
Optimism's inbound right now. First round fizzle, fans are going to lose their shit.
Oh, absolutely. They'll be calling for drastic changes. I absolutely cannot wait for that moment. Oh, I'm just looking forward to the knee-jerk reactions. And, oh, the Spezza bandwagon's going to start up again big time, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're going to put some money on that?
That's what I'm looking forward to most. Yeah, the Spezza bandwagon kicking in again.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to bet against you on that one either.
No, not in this city. We know it too well.
But optimism goes beyond the Senators' recent success. Playing in tonight's game against Carolina, actually, is Bobby Butler, who's making his debut after being freshly signed out of the NCAA. You want to comment on that?
First of all, I'd like to take this moment to announce the official nickname of Bobby Butler being the Marlboro Man, hailing from Marlboro, Massachusetts. So,
Massachusetts?
Yeah, you like that?
It's in Massachusetts.
Mass. Boston, Mass. You like that better?
Yeah, he's a masshole.
Yeah, he is a masshole. But we're going to call him the Marlboro Man from this point on. Marlboro Man, the guy was extremely nervous coming into the first skate ever with the Senators. Huge week for Butler, too, right? Hobey Baker nomination, humanitarian award, and then the Senators thing all at once.
You know what's working in his favor, though? Jesse Winchester hasn't exactly set the bar too fucking high with this team.
Yeah. Collegiate players, you were better off in Anaheim, maybe.
To his credit, though, he scored 29 goals to lead the NCAA, as opposed to Jesse Winchester's 8 goals to lead what, like Colgate? Did we ever find out what school he went to?
Yeah, he went to Colgate.
He did?
Yeah. He was heavily recruited by Crest, but he turned them down.
Going the whole collegiate route, that's kind of been a Brian Murray, I don't want to say motive, but it's been one of the staples of whatever regime he's been part of in the last, like, what, 15 years? Going back to his time in Anaheim, he signed guys like Chris Kunitz, Dustin Penner, Andy McDonald. I think Travis Moen might have been another one.
Yeah, he was.
How much weight and credence are you going to give the Murray regime for being able to cultivate these NCAA overage undrafted talents?
So when it comes to NCAA prospects, I think the best way to explain it in hockey is by using a sort of off-kilter reference to baseball. Surprise, surprise on this show, once in a blue moon. But I was reading an article about intercounty baseball coming to Ottawa and how the owners were going to turn over every rock and stone to find talent to put on the team. And I think that's just something that's become increasingly popular in hockey, especially when you see the hot commodity that are draft picks. And we always go back to the Brian Burke saying, signing one of these kids is like signing a second-round draft pick, right?
Yep.
It's a freebie. So that's absolutely huge, right? Anytime you can acquire a prospect with even a remotely high ceiling for nothing, except for Eugene Melnyk's money, sign me up. And he's a right-winger, too. even better. You look at our depth chart immediately.
The two best guys are old, yeah.
Yeah, you'd have to be a blind or the ref in the first half of the Senators' season not to see that.
And maybe that's part of the bigger picture in which Murray flipped those second-round picks, right?
Yeah, it's entirely possible.
If you can replace these guys with NCAA talent like Murray's tried to, it's okay, maybe. It's a bit more tolerable, I guess is the best way to put it.
Absolutely. And, you know, maybe Murray gambled a little bit by saying, I'm going to make these deals now, then we're going to grab this Butler kid. But maybe it wasn't Butler. Maybe it was someone else he had his eye on. He knew he was going to be able to fill that hole with a quality player. And sure enough, UNH is suiting up tonight in against Carolina. Should be interesting. What are your expectations from him for tonight's game as well and for next season? Right off the bat, let's just hear him. I'm curious.
Not to be a minus player, I guess is the biggest one.
Okay.
Because realistically, he's only going to play, what, like 4 or 5 minutes?
Yeah, he'll have...
He might get some scant play power play time on the second unit. My expectations for this guy aren't very high. Like, well, you know, first two games, he's going to be nervous as hell.
He'll be severely outmatched, too, probably, in these first few games.
Well, like you mentioned earlier in the show, you said he was nervous as hell coming in. So, you know, the butterflies are going to be going. He's going to be trying to, like, hopefully he's not trying to do too much out there. He'll, you know, play a safe game, play a smart game, and that's all you can ask.
Yep, absolutely. But
I mean, like, the real test for that guy is going to be next fall.
Oh, yeah,
training camp. But, I mean, competition is going to be high, and I think that's one of the things to look forward to.
Well, that's one of the things Murray talked about as well, right, was giving these guys a taste of the action now so that the team and the players would be able to figure out what was going on and adjust, have the offseason to work on it, and have a good run at it in the fall. And hopefully this kid makes the team out of the fall if he's any good.
Briefly, do you think that's a good idea for a team that's fighting for some playoff seeding right now?
I think it's a calculated risk. I mean, the Senators need to secure, what, another 3 points over the remaining 5 games?
I don't think they're going to drop out of fifth, but, I mean, they can still go high.
Yeah, at this point, obviously this is going to date itself after tonight, but we're, what, 7 or 8 points right now?
From Buffalo, I think, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think we're even going to catch Buffalo. It might be feasible to catch the fourth place team, though.
No, I mean ahead. I think everyone has, what, 80-some points, and we're up at
80? Oh, I think we're up by 5. I think everybody else is 82.
Okay, so there we go. So as long as we can secure a playoff spot and we're not slipping out of 5, by all means, play some kids, rest some people who need it.
Yeah.
And get the team going.
No, that's a good point. Also, besides Butler, a number of Senators prospects have actually signed contracts now. You have Robin Lehner signed, his entry-level contract. Patrick Wierkosz, same boat. His collegiate career is done at Denver. Eric Greiba is the same way. Hopefully that's the way you pronounce his name.
Yeah, that's the product of internet research right there. And I dare any Sens fan outside of Michigan to pronounce that name right first time around.
I think he's from Boston, though, isn't he?
Yeah.
He went to Boston, but is he from Michigan?
He played his hockey in Michigan.
Okay.
Collegiate hockey.
Jared Cowan's done with Spokane. They just got bounced from the playoffs against Portland.
And, of course, Cowan signed his entry-level contract, what, a month ago?
Yep. Roman Wick.
Yep.
Another Senators prospect who's rumored to be coming across the pond to come and try out next year. I don't know whether or not Mike Hoffman and Louis Caparusso are going to be the next guys to sign. It's kind of interesting to be a Sens fan right now because all these prospects are... They just seem that one step closer to making the show, you know?
Yeah.
So there's tons of burgeoning optimism around the Capitol that goes beyond the Senators' recent success on the ice.
Especially when you look at, if I were just to tell you right now, without naming people's names, that we had the MVP of the Q and the MVP of the NCAA and a goalie whose father was the goaltending coach for Henrik Lundqvist. Do you think things are pretty much all right in Sens land for our prospects, and I'm beginning to reevaluate my stance on
have you noticed that trend with Swedish goaltending prospects where they all have that relationship with Henrik Lundqvist?
Everyone knows
always that parallel being drawn. Everybody wants to be the next King Lundqvist.
Yeah, it's like when Peter Forsberg's dad was coaching the national team, right? Everyone had been coached under Forsberg's dad.
Oh,
they're gonna be the next big shit.
It's uncanny.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter who it is. Like Gustafsson with Toronto drew the same parallels, and it's just, at some point stop.
Yeah, I love.
Mind you, nobody wants to be compared to Tommy Salo. So.
Sammy Salo's okay. I think Pascal Leclerc. We could draw some nice comparisons between him and Sammy Salo.
Mr. Glass.
None of those guys can do up the fly on their pants without being injured for a week. Nothing more frustrating in hockey than an oft-injured player, eh?
No kidding.
It's like a knuckleballer.
Another young Senators player who's been playing really well of late, Peter Regan. He's finally had a chance to like get called up to the first line. He's thriving right now playing with Jason Spezza.
Killing it. Natural goal Hofferson. Scorer.
Yeah, he's got, what, like 14 goals now?
Yeah, 13 or 14.
So, I mean, if he has a good couple of next few games, he actually has a chance to crack 20.
That's relatively high expectations. I'll temper those immediately. But I certainly think another at least 2 to 3 goals is within his grasp. And I think next year will be the year that we really see what this kid is capable of. Hopefully he sticks on the first line and that the Senators put him in a position that he needs to be in order to succeed and to play his game. And, you know, this is something that you've discussed on the blog before. You and I have discussed in private. But the Mahalik-Spezza combination and what that was doing for the team was nil. These players look like separate entities on the ice, right? Like, they couldn't have been any further apart than Mercury and the Sun. And there's just no cohesiveness between them. All of a sudden, you get a guy like Peter Regan playing with Jason Spezza. Spezza is able to make him better, or at least the stats would show that, right? And that's what I'm looking for right now. That's what I'm excited to see. It's not the Senators pushing these prospects into where they fit in the lineup as, you know, more importantly, where they are going to succeed and where you can see them the best down the road, or if you're looking to flip them.
But I found that Spezza was only playing with Mahalik because of reputation. You know, you look at the team on paper, you're like, all right, number one center, number one left winger, done.
Yeah, speed, you know, and a playmaker. It makes perfect sense. You'd be an idiot not to try it for a long time.
But as the season progressed, you look at Milan Mahalik and you say, well, he's having trouble taking passes. He's not a trigger man for Jason Spezza. Why are they still together? Spezza doesn't improve Mahalik at all as a player.
Yeah.
And going forward, like, I don't know. It's kind of weird. Where do you put Mahalik? Like, second, third line?
Well, I think you put Mahalik at second line.
But I mean, like,
number one.
Who knows if he's going to be able to play with Fisher, right?
Well, he's got his, you know, moderate offensive prowess there. And I think it's just more important for him to be playing on the second line with some quality players around him, first of all. But he needs to have a guy on the back end who can really move the puck well. Like, I just always have these wet dreams at night thinking about Eric Carlson.
You always
Carlson.
Have wet dreams at night.
Eric Carlson, two-line passes.
I have to cut you off for a second. Did you say Milan Mahalik offensive paralysis?
Yeah, he has the potential for it, right?
Or did you say prowess?
Prowess. He's got 22 goals this year.
Yeah, okay.
Tell me more.
Tell you more? I don't know. He's just one of those guys who seems like he needs a good outlet pass as opposed to a center who feeds him the puck in front of the net, you know? Most of his goals, I find, come off tips or deflections in front of the net, garbage goals, or else they come off the rush where he receives a pass at the blue line and, you know, uses his speed to get around a defender and then goes to the net. And that's how he gets his goals. It has he has no dependency on the center whatsoever.
Yep, that's quite true. Yeah, and it comes back to, I forget what guest it was that we had on. I think it might have been Lever Sage, who was talking about how Milan Mahalik is still a very young guy, and that's something that is overlooked often in Ottawa, right? Like, this isn't a kid who's in the prime of his career right now. He's just still coming into it and figuring things out. New landscape, lots of expectations, and it's been an injury-riddled season for him as well.
First year with the team trying to fit in.
Like, you wouldn't say it's an ideal situation for someone to thrive in. I mean, I know...
And trying to replace Ely's production?
Yeah, that might be the theme of today's show, right, is expectations and being put in a situation to thrive, but Milan Mahalik, for his bucks, should have been better this year than he was. Still an extremely exciting player on the ice, and you just feel like he's a player or two on his line away from being, you know, a breakout guy. I never see him as being a 50-goal guy, but certainly 30 is reasonable.
He kind of reminds me of Vermette as one of those guys who
Oh, he's
shows...
better than Vermette.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm not comparing him skill-wise.
Okay.
Or, like, talent-wise. But in terms of, like, that guy who teases you, like, he shows enough flash where you're like, oh, this guy's amazing. And then, you know, by the end of the year, you're like, fuck, what happened to his assist totals?
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, exactly. And sorry I gave you the knee-jerk Ottawa reaction there, cut you off mid-sentence and had to jump in and defend my boy against the horrible Vermette comparison.
Sorry. That's all right.
Forgive me for the city.
Don't worry about it. It's all good.
So let's talk about Mike Hoffman a little bit. There's an interesting character.
Yeah, go nuts, man.
Q stats. Do you feel that they're ever inflated a little bit because of the nature of the league?
It's an offensive league. It's not like the W.
Yeah.
That's all, you know, very tight checking. And
I find the
O is kind of like the hybrid league. And then based on reputation, the Q is just the offensive and kind of like the Senators Capitals game from the other night.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Just keep your head up and watch out for those flying elbows at the red line.
So how much stock do you put in the fact that he won the MVP of the league as an overager? Is that something that impresses you? Obviously, it should on some level. But is that really, you know, is that going to pencil Mike Hoffman in for the Senators lineup next year? Well, I certainly don't think
Well, no, but it's like you look at all the prospects that Ottawa signed in the last while. Yeah, sure, they're highly touted, and it's nice to have them finally signed and inked. And, you know, they're only, you know, they're one step closer to the NHL. But at the same time, none of these guys have played a game. And until they do, you can't really gauge how successful a guy's going to be, right? You can't get too up. You can't get too down. But it's nice to see that they're thriving at this level. And I guess that's the best way to put it. Like, you can't expect anything right now.
Yeah, absolutely true. And not to get ahead of ourselves or anything, but Murray had that quote in the paper about how he wasn't signing prospects who he didn't think would be able to make this team or have a chance to make the team. So obviously they're really focusing their efforts on, you know, just keeping the cream of the cream in their system. And that's it. So, you know, it's still a little bit funny to me that they haven't signed Hoffman at this point after going on that massive, you know, tear of signing kids from all over the world. Basically, from what I assume, pulling Patrick Wierkosz out of university as he screams to hang on to it.
But weren't they on record as saying that they tried to sign another kid, but he hadn't decided to come out yet?
I'm not sure who that was. I haven't heard anything about that quote.
Maybe it's Louis Caparuso. I don't know. But, yes, yeah, it's something to keep an eye on. Maybe it's some undrafted NCAA again. Like, who knows?
Yep.
Maybe they're trying to augment the prospect core.
Or at least float enough kids that they get some, like, you know, even looking at the defense right now, it's going to be a, you know, ridiculous clusterfuck logjam in, what, 2 years, 3 years, if certain people stick around. I mean, yeah, obviously things are going to change, right? But it's just nice to have the farm.
I think that's all relative to their postseason success because, you know, if I don't want to assume Ottawa's going to, like, lose after a round, but, like, you know, inevitably, the changes will be made this offseason, regardless of what happens. Like,
oh, definitely. It affects everything, even the most fundamental things like your draft position.
Well, even Don Brennan's column today where, quote-unquote, have to sign Mount Sutton.
Yep. Of course, leave it to the Sun to completely forget the big picture that in order to sign Mount Sutton, that someone else of that might have to take a walk, right? Or what are you going to do with these guys? Like, where's your...
Are you shitting on Don Brennan for not mentioning that Philip Kubo has to get dealt?
I'm shitting on Don Brennan for not publicizing a 5-year plan for his D-Corps when he talks about Mount Sutton and how he should be signed. The guy's old. Well, yeah, he's 36.
You can't expect that from the Ottawa Sun, though. It's a day-to-day paper that follows the day-to-day activities of the team.
Of course. Of course. I realize it wasn't a massive feature piece, and I would be one of the first to agree that Sutton probably should be re-signed to a small contract that will keep him here and keep him in a competitive hockey market close to Kingston and away from his 100-year-old home and everything else in Atlanta. Anything like that would be great. One guy who I definitely see being maybe the odd man out. We don't need to get into this. Fuck it. But Philip Kubo. I mean, can you count how many ways his days are numbered in Ottawa?
It depends on what's going to happen in terms of free agency and Volchenkov. If Volchenkov's re-signed, I think Kubo's out the door. And if Volchenkov walks, maybe they keep him. Maybe they sign another guy, like I mentioned on the website earlier. Maybe they sign a guy like Gontrard with a short-term big deal.
I love that. I absolutely love that. I cannot speak highly enough of that suggestion. I think it's fantastic for the team. I think it's just what they need right now to complement their offensive forwards. You know, we talk about the puck-moving defenseman and how it's always been this crucial necessity for Ottawa. And just as soon as Erik Karlsson pops into the picture, you realize how much better he makes these forwards around him. I don't remember what game it was. It could have been many, I guess. But you see Erik Karlsson, like this was over the past week, Karlsson banging away at the front of the net. And you're like, well, you know, there's our friggin' offensive defenseman right there in the blue paint. This is the guy that we need.
Oh, and the power play's gotten progressively better in the last, what, like 5-10 games?
How much of that do you address to Karlsson, though? I don't give it much,
well, it's
I don't
up
give
and
it
down,
much
right?
thought. Yeah, I don't know what's doing it, but it's certainly working for them.
I find Matt Cullen on the point actually has a presence.
Cullen's a very, very, very effective player. This is another guy who came completely misadvertised to us.
You think so?
Yeah, I do. I think
really?
He's shown a lot more skill and responsibility in his own end. And his positioning on the ice, he's not afraid to lay the body. He's versatile on, you know, every position at forward.
Every time I think of Matt Cullen, I'm reminded of the Carolina Cup run that they had, where he was such a, you know, an intangible piece of that team.
Oh, definitely. And there's another intangible that we completely never discussed is his playoff experience. And having played with guys like Brind'Amour and Cam Ward. I mean, you cannot tell me the guy maybe once in a while in the dressing room doesn't say, you know, keep your head up, Elliot. You know, crazy things do happen once in a while. Sorry, I'm not sure how you want to get into this because it's kind of the Columbine of hockey situations here. But one thing we certainly need to address here is the ongoing relationship of Alexei Kovalev with the Ottawa Senators media, particularly columns publicized by the Ottawa Sun, which...
Oh, that's not true. I wouldn't say it's exclusive to the Sun. I know Don Brennan has stood up for the guy on numerous occasions.
Predominantly.
I don't find Kovalev gets the support of the local media whatsoever.
Okay.
And it doesn't even matter if... Well, keep going. You weren't finished. I cut you off. Sorry.
I was just saying, predominantly, the Sun tends to focus negative attention towards him, sometimes justly, other times unjustly, sometimes for no reason at all. There's other people you could pick on. Like, why is Ryan Shannon never singled out? Why, when he gets benched, is it always, you know, a nice story about the kid working hard to get back onto the team? And
because Ryan Shannon's a little prick.
Yeah. How did that get published?
Yeah.
A little prick. Who's pretty fuck or pretty solid, right?
You're allowed to say fuck on this podcast, Tim.
Yeah, a little prick who's pretty solid, and according to Clouston. So I don't know, but anyways, Kovalev, I guess, was being quizzed hard by the Sun
because it writes itself, right? It's the same reason why we've shat on certain media members more than others. It's so fucking easy that you know it just becomes part of your.
It becomes habitual.
It becomes part of your writing fabric where, you know, just Alexei Kovalev wasn't at practice. You know, don't worry, though. He didn't buy a gun and kill himself. Like,
yeah.
Like is it absolutely dumb to read? Sure.
Well, when Kovalev said it, it was a great quote right off the bat, right? When he said, I'm playing the same way I've always played. I'm not getting the results right now. You know, things happen. What am I going to do? Go home and buy a gun and shoot myself? Like, obviously, the guy could afford a pretty sweet gun.
But that's the same thing as Danny Heatley, right? Like, the difference between a good Danny Heatley game and a bad Danny Heatley game was what? Like, one or two goals?
Yeah.
He played the same way, regardless of how many goals he scored. It's just... It's the same kind of thing with Kovalev, to a lesser extent, because, like, fuck, he's 37. Like, what do you expect from the guy? He's going to put up 60 points. Sure, he looks fucking effortless, but that's the guy you signed. Like, why is this a surprise? Why are you shitting on him? It's the same fucking guy.
And the thing I don't get either is, you know, people always come back to the contract, and obviously that's important here, but that's $5 million that we just wouldn't have paid a player this year, right? Probably.
Well, it's like paying Brian Gionta $25 million over 5 years?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, I'll take the short-term contract with Kovalev. Maybe he puts up a 70-point year.
Who knows?
You roll the fucking dice. And for a team that needed secondary scoring, like for a short-term fix, what else were you going to do?
Exactly.
Like, I don't know if it could have been better than that, just in terms of production and who you could have brought in on a short-term deal. Like, I don't know if necessarily, I don't know if getting into bed with like Mike Camilleri for a huge pact is the right thing for this team to do.
No, I think at this point in the development, where we're seeing kind of a transition team right now at this point, right?
I know I brought this up with you before, but it's kind of like the NBA situation where you get guys making franchise dollars who are like tier two superstars, right?
Yep.
And it's the same deal. It's you can't afford to put yourself in a position where you're paying tier two talent, tier one money, and then you're locked in long term because we have a few guys like that already.
Yeah,
and you can't afford to do that more. And Kovalev, he is what he is. He's going to get you 60 points. Fuck off already with the fucking comparisons where he's an enigma. He's not producing. The effort level isn't there. It's like you got in bed with the guy to get you 60 points. That's what you're going to get. Relax. Focus on a different angle because nothing's going to change.
Exactly. And I didn't hear too many Sens fans booing when he scored that beauty goal in Washington, right? How many guys can do that? And if the guy, you know, the $5 million to me is a serious investment in, like, obviously it's a huge risk-reward situation. The guy probably didn't want to come to Ottawa, but the money was there. He did it. If this guy is able to catch lightning in a bottle, even for one round in the playoffs, that will all be worth it to me, right?
Ooh.
And what happens, furthermore, if the guy scores a big goal in a game seven down the road?
Well, then people will love him.
Of course. That's the problem. Maybe the enigma isn't on the ice, but it's the guy's criticizing the guy all the time. Unbelievable. Jeez, give him a break. One day he's brilliant. He's got these awesome hockey videos.
But listen to his quotes. He doesn't care. And that's the thing.
It's not that he doesn't care. The guy is being completely brutally honest.
No, like, no, but he doesn't care what the media says. Like, he is being honest.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, you know, this is who I am. And the puck's either going to go in or it isn't. Like, I'm doing the same thing I was doing before. It's just it is what it is.
Yeah, exactly. And like most people at their jobs, I assume, you know, I do a lot of, you know, very mundane, repetitive tasks over
punch
the course
the clock,
of the day.
Tim, punch the clock.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I do. I punch the clock every day and that's my job. But Kovalev does the same thing too. And it's like getting shit on when you do the same task properly or the same way you always do it, you know, every once in a while. It's just the way it's done. Either fix it or leave it. And Kovalev, we're left with them for another year.
And that's it.
And I'm okay with that.
They're what they are. Like, there's, what, like a 5 to 10 seed? That's what they were predicted to be before the season.
If that, right?
And, like,
if that. Although Klustin had them pegged as a playoff team all along from day one.
But, like, Kovalev, he brings secondary scoring to this team. This team needed it. And to complain that his production isn't as consistent as people would like it to be, well, that's Kovalev. Get over it. Move on. Find a new angle. Find something to write about. And it's become tiresome. Like, regardless of whether this team wins, loses, whatever. Kovalev's Kovalev. Fucking move on. It's like Manny Ramirez. It's complaining about his work ethic. Mind you, that guy produces all the time. There you have it.
Yeah, there you have it. I think Manny's a little bit of a better quote, though. And a little bit... I don't know. I've never seen Manny moonwalk. Have you?
No. He was ringside for WrestleMania, apparently, though. I saw that picture on Bill Simmons' column.
So basically, in summary from this Kovalev thing here, what I want to get at is the guy is what he is. We all know about it. Quit talking about it. Pick on someone else who actually deserves it for once, please.
No, no, not necessarily pick on someone, but like Kovalev's not producing.
Pick you know? On, target, write about, whatever it is, your column has to have a focus one way or the other, right? It's got to have some structure.
But that's the problem with the day-to-day coverage of the Ottawa Senators, right? Like, that is the story for fucking, like, 2 weeks. What, 10 games?
Yeah. How many games has Ryan Shannon not scored for?
Yeah, or Milamaholic or Daniel Alfredson for 11 games. You never hear about that. But, like, it is what it is, right? Those guys contribute in other facets, and that's what Kovalev doesn't do. And because he doesn't do that, he's your target, right? And he has this fucking stigma attached to him, even from his days in like Pittsburgh, New York, Montreal. He's an enigma, man. That's what you get.
So hopefully the enigma can attract all the defensive, or at least some decent defense pairings in the playoffs and maybe free up some more room for one of our other boys like Pete Regan or something.
Pete Regan, killing it.
Pistol Pete's what they call him, apparently. Yeah? I wonder if Kovalev gave him that nickname after a gun he maybe gave him or something. Here, Pete, you haven't had the best rookie season. Might want to go finish yourself now.
It was probably Brennan that... Masshole in disguise. He's probably a Maravich fan.
Massholes everywhere, eh?
Why don't we take a break and we'll come back with our playoff primer, because we're not going to be recording until April 11th, which is after the last game of the regular season, so...
Yep, okay, sure. Well, let's turn it out.
Sounds good. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
All right, and we're back, and Graham, how did we forget this? I wanted to bring this up so badly. Corvo, did you not notice him? It seemed like he was being targeted in the Senators game. It almost makes me wonder, what the hell happened? Like I saw Chris Neal take a few very, very, very healthy runs at him. People certainly were not shying away from him in the corners. Mike Fisher has been on this. He's had a firecracker up his ass or something over the past few games.
Good.
He was going after Corvo. And it makes me feel like someone stood up in the room and said, you know what, here's $1,000. Someone
pivot make it to the blackboard.
Someone make Corvo bleed on the ice.
Well, he asked for a trade, right?
Yeah.
That's long been rumored. Brian Murray said he did.
Corvo said he didn't.
After, yeah, obviously.
Maybe we'll have to check his live journal. I think only a guy with tattoos like that could have a live journal.
Well, maybe Don Brennan's not the only one who disliked Joe Corvo here in Ottawa. Maybe his teammates didn't like him as well. But I remember actually when Corvo was dealt by Ottawa to Carolina, and he was dealt with Patrick Eaves. And I remember Mike Fisher came out in the papers, and the paper actually made note of this. They just ran like a regular column. Shortly after the trade, and Mike Fisher actually asked a reporter, he's like, do you mind? I actually have a few things to say about Patrick Eaves. And, you know, he extended well wishes and all those formalities, I guess, because Patrick Eaves was a great guy, a great teammate. And I think the reporter at the time asked him to extend the same
Like explanation?
Not explanation, but like, do you have anything to say about Joe Corvo? And Fisher said, well, I didn't really get to know him that well.
Yep.
For a team that went to the Cup Finals, that's a huge, you know, that's a huge thing to say, right?
Well,
usually that would bring the guys pretty damn close, you'd figure, right?
But, yeah, but I don't know. Like, I've played sports in my life. You have too.
Yeah.
You know, when you get a team together, there's a lot of different guys, a lot of different personalities that go into the team. And do you really think that the emo hipster with bad tattoos is going to be hanging out with Joe Church? Really? Like, do you think that's how, like, the little, like, cliques in the team fall into place? Like, do you think that...
Well, I don't know if Joe Corvo went out and got a tattoo after Chris Neal hit him and then, you know, just to signify the occasion. It wouldn't surprise me, though. But
I wonder if Jesse James went out and got a broken heart with Sandra Bullock. What's the other chick's name?
I don't know her name.
Tattoo model is all I remember.
She looks like Joe Corvo with all those tattoos. That's nasty.
Joe Corvo has way nicer pecs. I've seen that. That picture we always use with the tape measure, the trainer, whoever it is doing that.
Terrible. Terrible.
What, Corvo's tattoos or...
both are tragic stories.
Okay, so one tragic story to hopefully to not a tragic story. Here the Senators have 5 games left before the playoffs begin. One of those games is against a playoff team. The other 4 are certainly...
So this includes tonight then?
Yeah, that's included tonight against Carolina, but I think we can pretty much put the Panthers to bed at this point as well, right? So we got Buffalo last game. It is possible the Senators could end this season on a 10-game winning streak.
Every time we go on one of those rants, though, they end up going in the tank.
But that just means that they'll peak again in the playoffs. The roller coaster goes the other way too, right, Graham?
True. Yes. The next 4 games or the next 5 games are very winnable, Tim.
They are very winnable. But then the playoffs, we will lose.
I was hoping they'd actually get closer to Buffalo by the last game of the year.
Yeah, it kind of seemed like last week we were looking at the schedules together and we were looking at the standings and we both kind of agreed that, you know, it could happen, but it probably won't. And sure enough, yeah, Buffalo has pulled away. Those 2 games in hand really hurt us. And when you look at one thing that kills me about this stat, maybe this isn't the time and place for it. It's a podcast about hockey. Of course it is. Not like my girlfriend cares. The extra point awarded to the loser in overtime. Have you... Besides the Ontario education system, have you ever found a place where people are rewarded for losing? Ever. Just for getting close to winning.
I'd like to see that change because Ottawa actually hasn't won that many games in extra time. I think they, won like 5, 6?
Ottawa's lost 5 games in overtime
after
this year.
After the last one there against Washington?
Buffalo has lost 10. That doesn't include last night. I don't know what happened to them if they even played last night.
But you look at some of the other teams' records, they've won like 15 in extra time. You know, like that's 30 points.
It's so inflated. Yeah. It's so inflated.
I wouldn't mind seeing the 3-2-1 system that's been used in soccer. I don't really understand why that hasn't been used before.
Again, this is something for the summer as well when we're dead on material here. But I would love to see a soccer-style system employed in the NHL where you had different tiers and relegations.
You would have given Coletta a red card after that too, right?
Coletta doesn't... I'm a big soccer fan, folks out there. But... what Coletta did wasn't even soccer-worthy. I don't even know what that was.
Best part of it was he got hurt. He had surgery on his thumb after that dive.
I saw that. Now he's done for the rest of the regular season, man.
Karma. Mike Fisher did a prayer.
He's a bitch. He is such a bitch.
Serves him right.
No kidding.
Serves him right.
He had it coming. Zach Smith should have fed him way better. I know. I know. Like, kudos to Zach Smith for getting into that fight. God loves Zach Smith. Certainly I do. I don't know about you, but whatever. I just wish he could have really... It was like watching, what's-his-face, Thornton fight Cook. He just never got the punch-in that everyone wanted.
So Ottawa's not going to really have a chance. Unless for some... Ottawa's not going to have a chance to finish third. They're likely headed towards a, fourth or fifth place finish against either, Pittsburgh?
Or New Jersey.
New Jersey. I don't know if Buffalo has a chance to finish second, though.
I don't know. We'd have to pull that up. I'm not interested in that now.
Like that, I don't think that changes anything anyways. But it's looking like we're going to be playing Pittsburgh or New Jersey the first round. Both teams haven't exactly been playing that well lately.
When you look at Pittsburgh's goals against, I don't remember the exact totals here. I'm being brutal with stats today. But their goals against isn't particularly good by any stretch of the imagination.
And Malkin hasn't really played a lot lately either. He's been playing hurt.
Yeah, because he was out a few games too, wasn't he?
Maybe that's a team that's ripe for an upset.
Yeah, definitely.
And because, you know, like, you look at their past two seasons, they've gone to the Cup. They've lost some pieces.
The Olympics.
Maybe the desire isn't what it used to be. And maybe complacency comes into play.
Yep, and you got a bunch of tired guys too, right? Like, we're going to see the Olympic effect, and I think Pittsburgh's going to be a really, really good example of that in the East, whereas Chicago would be in the West.
Are you cracking on Ottawa's Olympians for not going further in the playoffs?
Or in
their tournament, rather?
Listen, if Jarkko Ruutu starts to ever lay off the gas a little bit, I'll certainly pull the Olympic card for Ottawa. But I don't think his bronze medal run really drained the tank.
You got that stashed away, yeah. That's fantastic. But, do either of those teams scare you right now?
Of course, both teams absolutely have the right to scare you anytime you're forced to, face, Brodeur, Crosby right off the bat. That's scary. Like, it's so weird for Senators fans to go into a first-round matchup. You know, we've seen recently over the past, three seasons, two of them only pertaining here, to go into a first-round matchup and be the underdog, and we will be lucky. The NHL and hockey fans everywhere will agree that it will be a huge upset if Ottawa beats either of those teams. And that's a tough thing to really wrap your mind around, is that this is a huge hurdle for the Senators to beat these, dominant teams in the East. And after that, if Ottawa can do that, the East is wide open. But it's wide open enough as is right now for them to do it, but things will really become a lot more interesting if, one or both of those teams on the other respective matchup has gone too.
You know what I like about Ottawa's seeding, though? Like, if they finish in the middle of the pack, and assuming Washington and whomever finishes second advance, right? You're not necessarily going to play the top two teams in the second round. You're probably going to have to wait until the conference final.
Yeah.
And that's fantastic for Ottawa's sake. But if they really, personally, I feel, because of the moves that Brian Murray's made, where he dealt his second-round picks for Cullen and Sutton, Ottawa has to finish at least one round successfully. Or they have to advance one round successfully for this season to be a success.
And to justify Brian Murray's maneuvers, right?
No, absolutely. And I think if they fall flat, there are going to be a lot of criticisms for the Senators.
I can't even count the number of ways that criticism could be deflected as well. I mean, every facet of this team, whether it's from power play coach all the way down to what's happening in bingo, you could pick something out and make a solid case for it. And I'm sure we will see that.
Well, it's all Kovalev's fault.
Yeah. Well, that's the easy one right there. Kovalev. I'm just waiting for him to become a cancer in the dressing room now, too.
That's the next step.
Is that coming next? Maybe he'll have a flying incident in the summer.
We can write that on the website, and then everybody else can use it.
Yeah, exactly. Paging Roman Wick.
But yeah, it's the funny thing about Ottawa right now is you look at their roster, and you look at the success that they've had this season. Yes, the Eastern Conference is flawed, but you look at all the wasted money that Ottawa has spent, whether it's Pascal Leclerc, Jonathan Chichu, if you hate Kovalev, you can throw Kovalev in the same bracket. If that money could have been reused, mind you, a lot of teams are in the same boat, right?
What are you going to spend it on, right? It's like you at the end of our NL-only draft. You're sitting around with all this money, but nothing to spend it on, and you drop $20 on Pedro Alvarez. I mean, what are you going to do with this money? You're just going to sit there and collect interest in Eugene's bank. You might as well throw that money at the team now. If you're not doing anything, you might as well add a guy like Kovalev, because you got the money sitting there. You got the cap room. 2 years, who cares? We've talked enough about Kovalev. Let's get your nitty-gritty here on the final five.
Final five, Ottawa plays what? Carolina, Florida, the Islanders, Buffalo, and Tampa.
Almost in order.
Not in that order.
You got it close.
But yeah, like, those are what, one playoff team?
One,
and yep. Carolina's kind of like, what, 7 points at eighth or something like that. They're playing relatively well in the second half. But Ottawa set themselves up in a nice position where they can win some games, heading into the playoffs, build some confidence. Spot start certain players. I know they're not going to do it with Alfredson because they want to get into his 1,000th game. But if guys are hurting, they have enough bodies, especially with their recent signings like Bobby Butler, where they can afford to give guys a rest. And maybe Mihalik's injury, going back to that, that's not exactly a bad thing right now. Give him a bit of a rest as well.
Exactly. Like, why rush him back? That's a guy you need going into the playoffs, like many of the other Senators. And I really think that this team wasn't really built for the regular season, but we've just been seeing it so much whether it's against Philadelphia or the Capitals last night, and I think I'm the only person in the city of Ottawa who noticed the physical presence in the Washington game. I thought Ottawa was doing such a fantastic job at laying the body, providing really aggressive forechecking. Even if they weren't making the hit, you could still hear the footsteps coming, and that's enough to hurry plays.
Well, they were the aggressors in that game.
Yeah, absolutely. Like all the little scrums and stuff.
They ran into problems when they started making mistakes, and then Washington started burying them. And that was the biggest. That's the issue with Washington. If you limit your mistakes, you can beat that team. They're like Ottawa from a couple of seasons ago, and they're very beatable.
Definitely.
And I think every team in the East is, and that's kind of like the great thing going forward, where you can actually have the optimism to assume that Ottawa could feasibly make a nice little postseason run.
Yep, definitely. And I always say it, maybe not on this forum particularly, but you win cups with guys like Jarkko Ruutu and Chris Kelly and Chris Neal, and all those guys have had good regular seasons this year. Some of them career years. Not Neal, obviously, because he's not playing power play.
Yeah.
Anymore.
But you know what? Maybe it wouldn't be a good idea to burn through all this playoff matchup because like a lot of stuff can happen in the next five games. But
of course, it's just fun to roll the dice right now.
Next week, we're not recording until I think it's the 11th, which is the day after the regular season ends. So I think what we're going to do for that show is do a huge playoff primer. Hopefully, we'll get some special guests in for that show, and we'll try and make it a long one. And let's go grab a beer. I'm done.
Me too.
All right. Thanks for listening. Thanks for reading the website. Take care. Enjoy the Easter weekend.
Buy playoff tickets.